Good morning. I begin with a very special announcement. Ba-ba-ba-ba-bum! Yes, November 8th. Mark it on your calendars. Tell your boss I don't need to work on November 8th because November 8th is International Human-Animal Bond Day. Here to explain what the heck that means, Dr. Mark Johnson, chairman of the trustees of our special friends in the UK and vice president of the World Small Animal Veterinary Foundation, and Dr. Patrick Flynn, president-elect of the Human-Animal Bond Association and professional services veterinarian at Zoetis. Dr. Johnson, I start with you. What is International Human-Animal Bond Day?
Hi. It is to celebrate the relationship and mark the relationship in a formal way one day a year, which marks the relationship we have with between human beings and animals of all descriptions. We've had a very long history in the development of mankind from when we were first living in caves and trying to keep warm and surviving in those environments, all the way through to the current day. We've had relationships with animals for food, for protection of our herds, for companionship, for all sorts of reasons, and never more so than now in COVID. And the Human Animal Bond Day, the international one, is a celebration day which we have had in the designed for from the UK with Society for Companion Animal Studies and our Special Friends, which is the charity, from the sort of European perspective. But we've partnered with our friends, the Human Animal Bond Association over in America, to make this really a truly international day.
And Dr. Flynn, explain what the Human Animal Bond Association is. And launching from what Dr. Johnson said, this is certainly about, you know, when we talk about human animal bond, we think about our dogs and cats, maybe pet parrots, hamsters, guinea pigs, whatever else we happen to have in our homes. But it goes beyond that, as Dr. Johnson briefly alluded to. But I'm thinking beekeepers. I'm thinking zookeepers. I'm thinking all animals on the planet in one way or the other probably have something to do with us. So I'll let you comment. That's a big question there. I'll let you comment on all of that.
It's so true. It's such a dynamic and wonderful system, and perhaps family is the better word to use. We all belong to this wonderful, diverse animal family. Some people get irritated when I say this, but scientifically, we as humans are animals as well. We are all belong to the same group, and that's part of what this day is designed to do, is to celebrate that and to recognize that, because that's something that some people may know, but it's not until it's actually defined for them that they go, oh, yeah, that's true. And so it's important to look at it that way, all the way, as I say, from macro to micro, your relationship with the entire planet, all the way down to your relationship with your goldfish. It's all important. It doesn't all have to be looked at in at one time, but it's important to recognize how important all the little lives are on our little planet.
And the Human Animal Bond Association?
And the Human Animal Bond Association is a group of like-minded people who we feel like the way I've just described things. We say we advocate, celebrate, and educate on the human-animal bond in many different angles and ways, in support of groups like veterinary technicians and in education to both veterinary and non-veterinary groups on all sorts of animal topics, ranging from companion animal behavior all the way to beekeeper stuff, to how the heck are bats connected to our existence, and why do bats help us? It's been very fun to branch that out. So it's a kind of an enlarging circle that we continue to talk about, but that's what makes it fun.
I suppose part of this, Dr. Johnson, and this term has been bandied about forever, but I'll tell you, since the pandemic, I think many people have heard the term One Health. It is one world, right? So the International Human Animal Bond Day, I suspect, is also bringing in this One Health notion.
Yes, it is. And we have to be minded of the way we keep our animals. And without being too controversial, you know, the ways we treat fleas and ticks on our animals and the impact on the environment. Everyone thinks One Health just relates to the animals in our lives, but actually the impact we're having on the environment is just as important. And some of these agents that we're using to remove some of these parasites can escape into the environment. I'm a beekeeper as well, so I'm a bit of a strange character with two dogs, three cats, and thousands of bees. And I see it. The agrochemicals that we've used, the neonicotinoids, have an impact on the that are sprayed on oilseed rape and things in the UK. That has an impact on bee behaviour. And that bee behavior can lead to a degradation in their strength of their colonies and the way they then pollinate other plants in our gardens and on our farms. So One Health is very much environment as well as all of the other obvious things like human health and animal health. And we need to recognize that because it's a holistic view. It's not just humans and animals. There are diseases and impacts that we all have on each other, and we must recognize that. Some of them are good things, and some of them are so-called zoonotic diseases, where animals, they come from an animal disease, can cross the species barrier into humans, and vice versa. We're seeing that sometimes with you know, things like COVID. Everyone's going, gosh, does COVID cross the species barrier and go into to captive species in zoos, and so on. So and there are plenty of animal diseases that come across into human beings, like rabies being a good example.
Well, probably COVID came. We don't know yet, I know, but it's very likely that the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 originated in an animal, jumped another species, and then impacted us in a way which we all know today. Yet the human-animal bond includes bees and beekeepers. I have mentioned this on the radio before, but I've not talked to a beekeeper till now. So is it true that you have this human-animal bond with your bees, even though I suspect you haven't named them all? Oh, there's Charlie flying over there.
Well, in a colony, we might have between 20 and 30,000 of them. The vast majority of them are female. There's one queen and the rest are female workers. The male bees there are called drones, and they're good for one thing and one thing only. Then once they've mated, they die. So the whole colony is relating to females and the way it's all managed. But they are a key part of so much of our agriculture. They are, for me as a beekeeper, they've tuned me into what the impact is in the environment of the chemicals and things we're using. And actually, frankly, from a mental health point of view, we all are increasingly familiar with this word mindfulness. If you start opening a beehive and start examining them and looking at them and seeing their behavior and trying to understand it, you will find that time just flies, literally. An hour's gone by and you've gone, where did that hour go? And it's because you're really concentrating on what's happening. They will also pick up on whether you are relaxed in their company or not. Pheromones are key communication tools within bees. And when I first started keeping bees, that I would get stung endlessly. I'd look as though I'd had three tournaments with Mike Tyson by the end of it, even to a bee. Whereas now, you know, I approach the hive and they might be a bit grumpy, but they really don't get that bothered by what I'm doing. They know that the pheromones that I'm emitting are not so stressful to them. If they sting me, then the bee, when it stings, it emits a pheromone that says there's trouble here. And so others will come and join in on the attack. So if you are stung, then yes, that's one issue. But the communications that you learn from insects and the way we behave with them is really remarkable. And animals are really sentient and able to pick up those behaviors and will react in ways that are either accepting of us, and there is a real consent issue within our relationship with animals, which we're beginning to recognize, or they will really find us objectionable and not want to spend time with us and sometimes become aggressive towards us, particularly if they're trained to be that. But most animals will.
My producer is going to be aggressive with me if I don't break for a commercial here, which we're going to do November 8th, International Human-Animal Bond Day. We'll be back after these right here on WGN. Back with you on WGN Radio, Steve Dale's Pet World. This is exciting. International Human-Animal Bond Day. And this radio show right now is international. Dr. Mark Johnson, Chairman of Trustees of our special friends in the UK, and Dr. Patrick Flynn, President-elect of the Human-Animal Bond Association. But there's more. Yes, that's right. There's more. There's another announcement, I know, Dr. Flynn, that you want to make.
But wait, there's more. It's true. I love this stuff. I actually used to try and keep Christmas presents for an extra couple of days and open them slowly because I just wanted to stretch Christmas out. And that's kind of what we're doing here. It's going to be great on the 8th. It's going to be very cool. It's a brand new thing, but we're actually using this as an introduction to, again, another international effort to begin to educate and to talk about this stuff a little bit deeper way. And so we are rolling out the Human-Animal Bond Academy, which will be open to all members of Human-Animal Bond Association. And it is just a fantastic, already is a wonderful group of about 7 or 8 modules, about 50 minutes or so a piece on a really beautiful spectrum of discussions related to more and more things, you know, that not the regular stuff that we hear about bonds so much, more a little bit different. So we've got stuff on, believe it or not, consent. What are yes signals and no signals from cats and dogs? We've got things on cat behavior, but even more different things on abuse and neglect and how to recognize and deal with the interaction between, sadly, elder abuse, animal abuse, and spousal abuse. And unfortunately, they are all connected. So not go real down a really deep hole there, but it is something that many of us as animal caretakers need to know about. But then really happy stuff, like what about dogs? Dogs are really cool. How have dogs interacted with us through our existence as humans, and why are they so important, and what really makes them very special, maybe external to their cognitive abilities? So it's going to be super cool. I think, again, it'll be something that everyone can enjoy. And the beautiful thing is it's a tree of education. So this will just be the beginning, and we'll continue to add on as we get more content providers and more people interested. So if you're interested in that, let me know. But I think you'll be excited as you visit that. You can go through our website or directly there. Mark will give you info on that. So I'm excited. You should be excited again. I love that it's an international effort because the whole concept is universal anyway. We're talking about the whole planet and everybody who lives here. And I think that's just super exciting. So
what is the Academy website? And also the website, incidentally, for the Human Animal Bond Association, where I suspect also you can learn more.
Indeed. Super easy. Humananimalbond.net. We'll get you to the Human Animal Bond Association website. It's a brand new website. It's gorgeous. It'll tell you all about what we do and what we're doing, and certainly lots of opportunity to join if you wish to help us out as well. And then I will throw it over to Dr. Johnson for more information if you wish to access the Academy specifically. But we will be doing it where you'll need to be a member of one group or the other to access it.
So that you'll have to be a member of the SCAS, which is the Society for Companion Animal Studies in the UK, and the Academy will be available via vetacademy.org. That's where you'll be able to get more information. And to just pick up on what Patrick was saying, it's the animal impact in our relationships is not just companion animals for nice people living in nice places. It's homeless people who take their medications and want to live a better part of their life. Their family is often that animal with them in the streets that is keeping them sane. It's people who are getting into difficulties and fleeing domestic abuse. They won't leave a domestic abuse situation unless their animal is going to be able to come with them. And so we're trying to help people understand the impact of animals, the extra heartbeat in the life of that person, and the way they give up drugs because they want to keep that dog in their life, because they want to live in a flat or a house and keep that animal almost, I've got one case of a man who gave up drugs after 13 years because he was being thrown out of his apartment because he couldn't keep up the rent. He went clean for 6 months. His animals were fostered to reunite. And that person has remained clean of drugs for another 3 years. And it's these sort of stories that people need to realize. It's not just privileged people with animals. These are socially isolated and often vulnerable people. And we're trying to help them, their stories come through so animals get the due respect in the lives of us as human beings.
Absolutely. So in one sentence, you know, there's a day for everything. There's National Spinach Day, at least in America, Dr. Johnson. There really is a National Eat Your Pie Day. There's a National Celebrating Chimney Sweeps Day, you know. So there is a day for everything. Why is the International Human-Animal Bond Day important? One sentence.
Because we don't recognize the value of the contribution of animals in our lives nearly as much as we need to.
Dr. Flynn?
Because we need to celebrate our extended family. Whether we know it or not, we belong to a gigantic human and animal family on planet Earth.
Perfect. But you guys are great. This is a great idea, and I think really important. Dr. Mark Johnson, Dr. Patrick Flynn, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We did it. You know, I didn't talk about this, but this past week, National Veterinary Technician in America Week. Woo! Yeah, we were talking about International Human-Animal Bond Day in this show. But I will tell you, if you ever go to the veterinarian, the unsung heroes behind the scenes, they are veterinary technicians. And if properly utilized, and if they were paid more, that would be nice. But I'll tell you, if they were paid what they deserve, right now, so many of you tell me throughout the course of the year, the bills are too high, veterinary medicine is too expensive. You wouldn't know. You have no idea how much it would cost if we paid our technicians what they are worth. I mean, truly. And technicians do so much. I mean, there's a movement in the veterinary world to call technicians veterinary nurses instead. And in a way, I think it better describes what they do. Technicians sounds like, they fix the computers. They don't do that, you know, but they do everything else. Really, they do probably more than a typical nurse would do. Everything from administering anesthesia to helping the veterinarian with x-rays, getting the dog or the cat in the right position, that kind of thing, but also reading the x-rays, looking under the microscope for parasites. They're trained to do that as well. Talk to clients about everything. I mean, they are the primary communicators, I believe, in the world of veterinary medicine. And whether the topic is, how do you house train the puppy? Or my cat is missing the litter box again? Or the veterinarian says your cat is hyperthyroid. What did he say to me? What exactly does that mean? And what is this radioactive iodine thing exactly that I can do to treat it? Explaining all of those things to clients, helping at the beginning of life, especially for people that happen to have cats as kittens or dogs as puppies. And then at the end of life, helping with the euthanasia, but also helping the family deal with the euthanasia. And sometimes that goes on for weeks of support, even months of support. If veterinary medicine has a heart, and I think that veterinary medicine absolutely does have a heart. It's not only the veterinarians. I mean, I don't know anyone, and I know thousands at this point I do, of veterinarians or close to that. I know no one who's gone into it saying, okay, I'm going to get rich being a veterinarian. They go into the profession because of their heart. They want to help. They want to help animals, but they want to help families because pets are members of the family. Well, veterinary technicians, same thing, multiplied by 100. They're totally not going into it for the money. They ought to be making more money. We have to find a way to make that happen. We have to find a way to better utilize the expertise that they have. But having said that, I appreciate myself what veterinary technicians do every day that so often you, the average client, doesn't know about. The hardest thing about the pandemic is that veterinarians are also the not only the primary communicators, the primary huggers in veterinary medicine. And because of the pandemic, that hasn't been able to happen, right? So from a distance, hug your veterinary technician today. We will talk to you next week right here bright and early on WGN.